This episode is brought to you by North Texas Honda Dealers. North Texas Honda Dealers, they're here to help.
He has time, launches it to the end zone. Touchdown, Terrence Williams!
The throw goes to the right side for Crabtree. It's caught. He's the worst ever!
Bundy at the 10. What's he up the right sideline?
Yeah, he's got to go. He's tackled. Sam Houston wins it. The Bearcats capture their first FCS champion.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Republic of Football. I'm your host, Ishmael Johnson, in studio with producer Malpal. Mallory, what's up?
Hey, trying to stay cool.
Yeah, trying to stay cool.
It's going to be 100 next week.
Yeah, don't remind me. We will be in College
And we
Station.
Won't be even be here. We'll be outside in College Station all week.
Oh, God, for State 7 on 7. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's that time of year. Not in studio, but still with us, Mike Craven. Mike, what's up, man?
Still here.
Yeah,
I am still with y'all, so that's good. Made it to Yellowstone the appropriate week. I don't know if y'all saw, but it got washed away, basically. The whole park's closed, so I did a good job of planning there.
I did not see that.
When did that happen?
So, like, I think Sunday or Monday, like, a bunch of rain came in, and combined with snow melting, it, like, created this huge, like, river current and took out some of the roads and stuff, so they've, like, shut down the park for safety or whatever, so... Luckily, I did not go up all the way up there just to sit in West Yellowstone, so it was good timing on my end.
Yeah, good timing.
Yeah, definitely. So as if you guys followed last week, you know, we revealed the cover. Me and Craven had a very candid, anxiety-filled episode over our stories, over our cover stories that we did over Jeff Traylor, Joey McGuire, and, of course, South Oak Cliff. My secondary cover story went live on behind the paywall on Monday. So we're letting that, obviously, with the magazine delay and all that, we're putting that out for subscribers to read early. We will hint that Craven's will be coming soon as well. We don't have an exact date on that, but we'll be also doing the same thing with his. And yeah, if you enjoy that and you can't wait to read it in print and you can't wait to eventually read Craven's as well, be sure to subscribe, texfootball.com/subscribe. Make sure to get all that content, because we'll be doing things like this because we know the magazine's delayed for people who aren't subscribers, who wait for it on retail. It'll be delayed, obviously, until later in the summer, late July, early August. So we'll be doing things like this to give you a little tease, to be able to give you some content and hold you over until you guys can do it. Until you guys can read it for yourselves.
We also
do. You feel better with it out now?
Yeah, I do feel a little bit better with it out. It's you know, I haven't gotten any bad feedback. So,
well, that's good. That's always good.
yeah. So I definitely is a weight off my shoulders when Tepper told me, okay, it's up, to like now where it's like, okay, I'm calm. I'm
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So. We also have some exciting news. I'm not going to share it yet. I'm going to share it at the very end of the episode. Mm-hmm. So please stay tuned until the very end to figure out what we've got in store for you guys.
Yeah. Also, I can say that we have in store for you guys next week.
Next week. Yeah. As soon as next week. Yeah, so actually less than a week, 6 days, because it's going
to
be on Tuesday.
Yeah. So there you go. There's stay tuned for the end of that, for the end of the show to be given that bit of news. But we do have we want to continue our interview series with writers around the state, previewing/reviewing the 12 FBS schools. And this week we have Matthew Bartlett on from The Roost, covers Rice, and Craven talked to him. I believe a day ago. We're recording this on Wednesday. Talked with him on Tuesday, and we'll discuss a little bit about the Owls afterward. After we play that interview. All righty, we don't have many headlines. Nothing crazy. Kind of, it's conference realignment. More solidifying news, I guess. Nothing really crazy or new dropping. But just before we started recording, Conference USA, the schools that are leaving Conference USA for the AAC, rather, finalized and made official that they will be leaving in 2023 for the AAC. Of course, that is the Texas schools, UNT, Rice, and UTSA. Of course, in addition to Charlotte, FAU, and UAB, they will all be leaving. I believe they will be official members on July 1st, 2023. They made that official. That was rumored, I believe, last week. That was kind of the rumor. And now that became official today. In other realignment news, Craven has a piece out that's very interesting in regards to the new look Big 12 coming out. So this is kind of the thing we're going to hit on a lot for this intro segment. You look at the rankings for 2023, recruiting. This is recruiting rankings. And you're seeing a lot of old and new guard Big 12 teams littering the top 50. And even if you want to go below that, top 90, you're looking at Tech at number 2, Cincinnati number 4, Baylor 13, TCU 15, right? That's just the top 15. Craven, you have a really good piece up right now on TechSwivel.com about what it means for the Big 12, what it means for recruiting, what it means for the pecking order, and kind of, especially like a team like Cincinnati's case, kind of the need to push into that upper echelon of a new Big 12. You know, what was your initial, when you were writing this piece and when you were kind of researching, what were kind of your initial thoughts about where this conference is and kind of where it's going?
So I find that the new look Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma to be fascinating. And one of the reasons is if we look at every major conference, I think even if we went to the G5, but specifically if we look at the Power 5, you can find a couple superpowers in every single place, right? Like the ACC's got Clemson, the SEC's got Georgia and Alabama, the West Coast has USC and Oregon. The Big Ten has Michigan and Ohio State. The Big 12, you know, was run by Texas and Oklahoma. And again, this isn't always on the field, but this is just in terms of perception and recruiting rankings and all that kind of stuff. Well, when you take away Texas and Oklahoma, it becomes really clear, look, there's not this like obvious answer to who is going to run this conference in terms of talent acquisition, like who is going to be the big dogs on the recruiting trail. And so it was like, okay, let's go see, you know, what this is. And with the further and further I got into the numbers, it became more and more obvious that, yeah, this conference is going to bring parity to college football in a way that most major conferences do not. Like right now, Texas's average recruit or average commit grade is over 91. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's is over 89. There is not a single team within 2 points of Oklahoma's overall grade average for their commitments. TCU is leading the new look Big 12 in that category with 87.78. Mm. Eight of the 11 other teams that are going to be in the conference with them are within 2 points. So you have 9 teams within TCU and none within Oklahoma, right? So there's just going to be so much evenness throughout the conference that it's going to be kind of like the NFL where, you know, each week there's not many surprises. If you tell me West Virginia wins the Big 12 in 3 or 4 years, I'm not shocked. If you tell me Kansas State does, TCU, Cincinnati, Houston, like there's so many answers to like who's going to kind of take over and be kind of the first power of the Big 12 that I just find it fascinating because pecking orders are kind of assumed in college football. You know, like it is what it is and it's always been that way, right? Like Texas is always going to recruit really well even if they're not good on the field. Alabama's going to get who they want. Clemson's going to get who they want. Ohio State's going to get who they want. Well, what's going to happen when that power vacuum kind of goes away and it's everybody fighting for themselves? I think coaching is going to become, you know, a big factor. Like right now, I'd say Nick Saban has to coach twice a year, mm-hmm. you know, maybe 3 times a year. Well, if you're Texas Tech, you got to coach 10 times a year. You're not going to have any, you know, kind of like pushovers or anything like that because your talent level isn't going to be all that much different than the 6th, 7th, 8th best team in the conference. And so I think recruiting, you know, isn't the end all be all, as we've seen, you know, just because you recruit the best doesn't mean that you win the most. Mm-hmm. But I do think it gives an idea of what high schoolers think of your program. And right now, if you look across the Big 12, it looks like there's a pretty split opinion on kind of who are the best, who are not the best teams in the Big 12. You know, if you take away Kansas, maybe even BYU because of the way they have to recruit, you know, there's just 10 teams just stuck right in there that could win the recruiting battle on a year in, year out basis. And we don't see that anywhere else in college football in terms of conferences.
Sure. And I should hint, you know, like when you look at these rankings right now, obviously they're different in terms of, they're going to be different, right? When teams start playing, when in, mm-hmm. you know, recruiting momentum either picks up or dies down, you know, like Tech, I feel confident in saying Tech's not going to necessarily finish number 2, right? In the rankings when we're done with National Signing Day. But what it does show is like, obviously an initiative on the staff's part right now to really hit a lot of these guys hard, right? They have 20 commits. I believe that might be the most in the country right now overall. Everybody else is dealing with like more or less 10 to 15 mm-hmm. right now. So it shows initiative. But also, that's not to say that Tech's going to lose all of these commits either, right? Like, let's say Joey McGuire goes 6-6, right? Or wins six to get, or let's say even five. Let's say they maybe miss a bowl or just maybe barely get to a bowl. I think the recruits that he's getting now, they obviously know that they're not going to go out and win 10 games, mm-hmm. right? They're not going to be expected. They're going to be like, oh man, they only won six games. This team's not good. I'm not going to go, you know, I'm decommitting or whatever. He's selling them on what you're mentioning, Mike, about like the new Big 12, right? He's selling them on, hey, this year, you know, don't judge us too much on what we got going on right now. Wait until you guys get in, right? These are players I'm kind of trying to coach up right now. And you know, it's going to be a kind of a mixed bag first year. But I can almost guarantee that Joey McGuire is selling them on, hey, we're going to be competing for a Big 12 title within the next 5 years, like easily. And
I mean, if you go back and look at the 2021 rankings, I mean, Texas at 54.
Right.
You know, the year before that, they're like 47, 48. So even if he drops to say, even if Texas Tech finishes, you know, 23rd mm-hmm. in the country or whatever, sure. that's a huge, huge step forward and just like a huge announcement of intention from Texas Tech and from the players across the state, high schools across the state saying, we believe in what's going on in Lubbock. And if you take away Texas and Oklahoma, I think there's no more of that cap of like, we can't go win a conference championship here. You're going to play second fiddle here. Like Joey McGuire, Dave Aranda, Sonny Dykes, Dana Holgorsen, they can all go into recruits' homes and be like, hey, you can come compete for conference titles here. And if you win a conference title here, you go undefeated, you can get into the college football playoff. Cincinnati did it from the American. We can do it from the Big 12. And so I think this perception nationally is that the Big 12 is left for dead now. It's just a G5 conference. Like Texas and Oklahoma leaving makes it, you know, kind of like the American, you know, plus or whatever. I just don't find that to be true. I mean, I think Cincinnati is a heck of a program. Houston has all sorts of potential. I just think it remains an intriguing conference. And I think especially because there isn't that ability to kind of just like note two teams that are going to be kind of the leaders year in, year out.
Okay, here's a question. So if you're Cincinnati, if you're Houston, if you're BYU, how serious do you take this last year in the American?
I mean, I would say if you're Houston, I think you have to kind of strike while the iron's hot in terms of like, this is your roster, this is your year, right? Cincinnati's somewhat reloading, right? They lose Desmond Ritter and so they lose Sauce Gardner on the defensive end. So like they're not the same juggernaut as they were last year in terms of that group of that upper echelon group of 5 year. Cincinnati, I think you still obviously want to go in with some momentum. If you can't, you very much like outside of Houston and SMU, like you're very much right there in the AAC race. And I would think you'd want to go in pretty aggressively and show the Big 12. Like if I'm Tech, if I'm Baylor, if I'm the other schools in the Big 12, and I see Cincinnati make the playoff without having the allure of a Power 5 conference, right? Or if I see Houston potentially about to do that, I'm a little intimidated, right? Yeah. Once they get in there and then they have that, you know, Houston and Cincinnati are both right now, they're selling recruits on, hey, by the way, we're going to the Big 12 and we're going to be able to compete. Look what we've done without that pull, without that conference leverage. Now look what we can do, right? And so I think they're going to want to continue that momentum and be able to sell that and be like, look, you know, Houston, if they win 11 games, be like, look, we did that without you guys, right? Without the caliber recruit that we probably can get for in the Big 12. And so I think that they'll want to absolutely try to crush it this year.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, Cincinnati sold out their season ticket allotment for the first time ever, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Houston is trying to build that momentum. You know, I think on the football field, a lot of the stuff has been figured out. It's behind the scenes, right? It's funding, it's facilities, it's attendance to the games.
Yeah.
You know, Houston, UCF still have a ways to go in that regard. And so, you know, winning a lot of football games this year, competing for a conference championship this year, I think not only helps in recruiting, obviously, but it helps kind of the fan base, the alums, and just the people in the cities to go, hey, we need to start taking this seriously. They're about to take a step up in competition. You know, they're ready for this. Look how good they've been doing the last couple of years. Let's go buy season tickets. Let's donate a little bit extra money. Let's see what we can do facility-wise. Let's see if we can help with NIL, right? You know, in Houston, Central Florida, Cincinnati, those kind of places that are kind of growing in terms of college football markets. There's a lot of untapped potential in all of those places. Another good year in 2022 only helps springboard that into 2023. I think that's the same. I think it's also true for the Conference USA teams moving towards the American, but for different reasons. Like if you're Rice, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, you know, you're kind of taking a, you know, we're about to move up in competition. We're not winning at the Conference USA level. What do we need to do with our coaching staff? Same thing in North Texas. If you don't feel like you're competing in Conference USA, can you really feel like you're competing with the American? I think UTSA may be in the best position that way, just because, you know, they won a conference championship last year. They signed their coach to a 10-year extension. But I do think this year, you know, it's not a make or break or anything like that, but I do think it's one of those things that you want to have as much momentum as possible as things get harder and harder.
Yeah. One more thing on this before we switch over to your interview with Matthew Bartlett. I do want to ask about the SEC a little bit, because you mentioned how Nick Saban, you know, only coaches basically, you know, obviously hyperbole, but more or less only coaches like three times a year, right, where he really has to get out of bed. With Texas and Oklahoma going over, do you think those two coaches in Steve Sarkisian and Brent Venables are the type of coaches to be able to make Nick Saban, like, to use that as a barometer, right? Are those two coaches that would make Nick Saban work? Like, in my opinion, they didn't make those hires without the intention of moving to the SEC, right? I think that Texas had Lane Kiffin in mind, like in terms of like the style of coach, right? The offensive coach. They had Lane Kiffin in mind. They had teams that gave Nick Saban issues. Gus Malzahn at Auburn, right? That offensive mind when they made the Steve Sarkisian hire. I think Oklahoma, obviously they were putting more of a last minute bind with Lincoln Riley leaving, but I think that they had something similar in mind with what Kirby Smart's doing, right? One of the best defensive coaches in the game who knows how to combat these offenses, and they go get somebody obviously familiar with the program in Brent Venables. Do you think those two coaches are guys that are capable of getting, you know, Nick Saban more or less is like, oh, I gotta get ready for this one, right? Do you think that, I mean, we'll obviously see it this year with Steve Sarkisian in Texas, but just kind of what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer is no, honestly. Like, I think the higher you move up in college football, the more it becomes about talent and the less it becomes about X's and O's. And the Big 12 is going to be a parity conference because everything's so even. That's not true in the SEC. There are haves and have-nots there. Yeah. There is a clear separation between the top and even the middle to where, you know, we're going to see it September 10th for Texas versus Alabama. Even if Steve Sarkisian calls the game of his life, there's not much he can do if his offensive line can't block Alabama's defensive line. Like, there's just not much he can do. And that's what I mean by Nick Saban doesn't have to coach all that often, you know, compared to, you know, like, you know, small, you know, like in Conference USA where everything's so even, you know, it comes down to coaching a lot. Yeah. And the SEC, I mean, if you've got Georgia's roster, if you've got Alabama's roster, that gives you some margin for error that you just don't have elsewhere. If Texas and Oklahoma's rosters improve to that point, then, yeah, I mean, I think both of those guys are excellent coaches. Brent Venables is one of the best defensive minds of the generation. Steve Sarkisian, you know, there's a reason he was hired as the offensive coordinator at Alabama, right? Like, everybody respects his ability to call games. To me, it's more about, for them, it's more about catching up roster-wise, specifically in the trenches. And until that happens, I just don't know how much somebody like Kirby Smart or Nick Saban or even Jimbo Fisher is going to sweat the additions of Oklahoma and Texas until, you know, they're as good, if not better, you know, offensive line, defensive line than they have been over the last decade.
Mm-hmm. All right. With that being said, we're going to move on to our interview now with the Roost's Matthew Bartlett. Like I said, this is our continuing our interview series where we're interviewing a bunch of writers over after spring, after all that's settled and kind of before everybody starts getting into fall camp. Of course we did, I believe, Texas State and Kef Chardello first. And so now we're going to move on to Rice. So without further ado, here's Mike Craven with Matthew Bartlett.
Here with Matthew Bartlett at theroost.com. Thank you, sir, for coming on, talking a little Rice football. How are things going on your end?
Absolutely. It's a pleasure. It's June. Kids are getting back on campus. We'll have fall camp sooner or later, and then it'll be football time again, just like that.
What is kind of the level of optimism? I know coming out of spring, it's usually pretty high anywhere. Just compared to maybe the last couple of years, where do you kind of, you know, rank this team's optimism going into the fall and into the summer?
I think from a team perspective, that's the one thing that this group has been just as optimistic and positive as anybody could ask. So I think they really believe with where they're at. They think kind of within the walls that it was a couple bad injuries and a couple overtime bad bounces that kind of kept them from getting the bowl game they wanted to. I think on the outside, kind of there's some measured optimism. Last year was supposed to be the year and folks are not yet, but you're getting itchy for things to finally be delivered like they were promised.
you know, how would you grade or even describe kind of the Mike Bloomgren era so far?
Incomplete. Is that fair? I think if you're going to look at and you're going to evaluate a coaching staff, there's really only two prongs, right? There is progress on the field, wins and losses, and there's recruiting. Are you getting the victories and are you getting the talent? And from a recruiting perspective, three of the highest graded classes in the 247 recruiting era and Rice program history have been recruited by Mike Bloomgren. He's recruited the highest rated players, multiple to sign that Rice has ever had. And, you know, Jake Bailey, Luke McCaffrey, a couple other guys that have come in. So the talent is coming in the door. It's better than what was here before. Check that box. On the field, it's in there. So it's both pieces. Eventually, if the wins on the field don't catch up, you know, you run out of time. So I think so far, like we've said again, 2022 is going to be kind of the, you know, prove it or lose it season of can you translate half of that into, you know, the ultimate goal, which is the wins.
You know, I'd say Seth Luttrell at North Texas, Jake Spavadal at Texas State are kind of coaching for their jobs, for lack of a better phrase, going into 2022. Do you think that's the same with Bloomgren, that, you know, he needs to reach a bowl game or be 500, get to a winning record in order to kind of be the head coach of this team as it transitions into the American Conference?
I think the American point is a good, interesting, you know, kind of an inflection point for a lot of programs making, you know, all six of them moving to the AAC, other than, you know, UAB and UTSA. There's some uncertainties there. I think what Bloomgren has going for him is AD Joe Carlgaard tends to be pretty one on the analytical side, as you can expect at Rice. So if there's anybody that's going to say, you know, you went 5-7, not 6-6, here's why. It might be Joe, but at the same time, you know, at some point after so many years, you got to get there. So I think if he doesn't show tangible signs of progress and deliver on those expectations, then yeah, I think he's kind of run his course. Bowl game is the expectation once again, but it's one of those things, you know, I think this administration doesn't want to make the mistake of cutting bait too soon when they see you know, the building blocks that you're supposed to see. So wait and see.
You know, week one against USC, obviously a tough game. Who do you pick to take the first snap under center offensive-wise? Do you think it's going to be Wiley Green or TJ McMahon?
Are you asking me or are you asking me what I think the coaches are going to do?
I'm asking you.
If you ask me, I'm putting TJ McMahon under center. He's kind of – you know, I kind of labeled him a gunslinger into last year. He's the kind of guy, he threw an interception in that final game against Louisiana Tech that should have been the nail in the coffin, put him down two scores, and then led two touchdown drives in the fourth quarter and got him the win. So he's not going to be perfect. He's kind of raw. He hasn't played a lot of D1 football. But I think he kind of, you need a spark. And Wiley Green has been with this program for, I've lost track of how many years. He was in Bloomgren's original signing class at this point, led the win over UAB, which is the largest win this program has had under Bloomgren. So he's got some goods with him, but we've also kind of seen, you know, he can get sped up and maybe the upside isn't there. So yeah, McMahon might not have it. He might not be the answer, but at this point, you know, you talked about coaching for your job. I'd rather go out playing all my cards. And I think McMahon is that, you know, we don't know the upside or the downside yet, and it's worth trying.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion we talk too much about quarterbacks a lot of the times when we're talking about programs, but in Rice's case, it almost feels, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, it really does feel like the quarterback position hinges so much this year. I Ari Broussard at running back is going to be really good. I think everybody feels pretty good about that offensive line. I think I could argue that the wide receiver position is better off today than it was this time last year, even with Jake Bailey entering the transfer portal. Is it fair to say that Rice's success in 2022 kind of hinges on whoever emerges at that quarterback spot?
I mean, yeah, you mentioned it's cliche, but it really does. And we talked about this, I think back in the spring when I was chatting with you, if TJ McMahon does take a starting snap at any point this year, he'll be the 12th different quarterback to start for Rice since 2017. You're like, wow, Matthew, that 5 years, 12 quarterbacks. Yes, they've had three different starting quarterbacks in a handful of seasons under Bloomgren. And it's not been, you know, this guy's been ineffective, so we'll bench him. There's been a couple of those, but it's been injuries and just, you know, weird sets of circumstances. And they haven't been able to get any sort of offensive consistency whatsoever. I think you kind of saw the inklings of that under Coach Tui, OC brought in last year. But you really just need, you need one guy. They've kind of done that experiment where you have this guy to run in and come in, and he'll run kind of the option plays, the running plays, and Wiley will be the drop back guy. But I think you just ride with one guy and see where it gets you, because, you know, Rice hasn't had that opportunity yet.
Defensively, it feels like this group could be one of the better units to come through Rice in a long time. What do you consider the strength of that unit, the defensive line or the secondary? I think they both kind of would argue with each other on who's the better group right now.
Yeah, it's a good problem to have, right? I think Akinna Nkuwu and DeBraylon Carroll, you put them at edge and nose, that's going to be a havoc wreaking pair that we haven't really seen, because you know, they haven't been on the field together because DeBraylon was out last season. And that's, they got Isaiah Floyd. They got so many pieces there on the defensive line that I think could be difference makers. And then the secondary, Jordan Dunbar really kind of came on last year, kind of guy we thought would be, you know, buried on the depth chart. And, you know, he defended Treylon Burks in the Arkansas game. It did, like, went man on man with him at the goal line and won. And, you know, Treylon Burks is playing in the NFL. So Dunbar is going to be great. You got George Nyquil, who's now missed back-to-back seasons. Trayshawn Chamberlain was out last year. He just had so many pieces that the best iteration of this defense under Mike Bloomgren was probably at the tail end of the 2019 and 2020 seasons. And even the 2020 season, they didn't have most of their safeties back. This has been a battle tested, worn out unit the past 2 years, but, you know, knock on wood, going into the fall this time, everyone's healthy. And if you have all those pieces together, shoot, you might even have depth.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Like, does Rice have the depth to kind of overcome the injuries that are going to come with playing football, right? Like, I think that was one of the things I asked Bloomgren when I was there for magazine stuff, was like, how do you feel about the depth? And he seemed to be pretty honest about it in terms of, we haven't had it before, we think we have it now. Did that bear out to kind of you when you were watching where spring, where maybe that next group of guys was better than the next group of guys was maybe in 2019, 2020?
I think so, because in years past, the defense has been so good that, because every part of scrimmage, you know, you do the ones versus ones, and then you do the ones versus twos. And for whenever it'd been the second team offense versus the first team defense in years past, you know, stick it a fork in it, good night. It's over. We saw the second team offense. You mentioned some of those wide receivers. You know, you put Luke McCaffrey in there and just hand him the football. It didn't matter what other 10 guys are on the field. So we saw some sparks there. And then they had guys like JoJo Jean, who, you know, was probably the fifth, sixth, seventh corner on the depth chart going into spring. They only have three corners active for a scrimmage, and he steps up and is, you know, going one-on-one with the best receivers Rice has. So I think that's an encouraging sign, because you know, the bones, especially in defense, are good. To be able to see the twos and the threes come in and hold their own, you know, against playmakers like McCaffrey and Trey Patterson, that's encouraging. So I think that the second level is better than it's been in some time. It would be nice not to need them immediately. That's what Rice is hoping for.
What is your, I'm going to put you on the spot here, you know, kind of, what is your realistic expectations, you know, record prediction for 2022, if you had to pick right now?
I think 6-6 is, you know, that's obviously, you want to make it to a bowl game. You'd love to go win. Now, I think the upside is UAB last year. We saw Rice win on offense, win on defense, and win on special teams. I think from a roster construction perspective, this team is just as good, if not better, just from sheer pieces than they were last year. But you kind of got to look at the schedule. You know, especially starting at USC, you got Louisiana, who even without Billy Napier has been a juggernaut in years past, and Houston. And that's a really tough start out of the gate. And then you get on conference play and you're starting out, you know, against UAB. So it's going to be a tough opening haul. You know, last year, year before, Rice has had a Southern Miss to kind of stick in the middle to say, you know, y'all are a couple years behind us on the rebuilding process, get a win, kind of get our feet wet. There's not really any gimmies on this schedule. Got an FCS game. But I think, and if you get to 6-6 with this schedule, I think that's kind of, you know, proof in the pudding that, okay, we got the pieces here and we can take the next step. I think certainly there's, with this staff and kind of how luck they've had, I'm not going to be shocked if they go, you know, spot down and get 3 wins. And I'm not going to be shocked if they punch up and they get 9. They're not be a 1-win team. We have seen the consistency, I think, for them to be an 11-win team, but they're going to be somewhere in the middle, which with Conference USA, other than, you know, maybe UAB, UTSA up at the top, I think we're going to see a lot of teams in that 5-8 win range, just like last year.
Yeah, I mean, we saw how UTEP made such a big jump, right? I mean, go from 0 wins to 1 win, 1 win, and then up to 7 wins in 2021. So, yeah, I agree with you. The middle of the pack in Conference USA can go either way. You know, and then obviously I'm going to end with this, like the moving to the American is kind of on the fingertips of everybody, you know, because of the announcement that it's going to be 2023. Let's say I make you Rice czar, right? Like Rice athletic director for the week, and you got to get some stuff done or change some stuff to kind of get ready to move to the American as a football program. What are one or two things that you would be doing right away to kind of gear up for that change?
The first thing I do is I look at Rice Stadium, and that's something I'll give credit to the current administration. They're doing that right now. They put in used to be an old concrete slab running across the bottom and just kind of looked like a parking garage. They've got a brick exterior going up right now. It looks really nice. I think getting the fan experience up is going to be really important, because if you want people to go to football games, especially sit outside in August and September in Houston where it's a million degrees, you know, you got to make it a worthwhile experience. That's winning. But there are things you can do when you're not winning to make games fun, make people want to attend. You know, you see, I think the Sun Belt teams get a lot of credit for it. Not big budgets, but big fan bases and small fan bases that really, really care. So I think if there's a jump, something that I would do, man, get your think tank in, pull everybody together. What can you do to the stadium that, you know, was built 80 years ago? How can you modernize it? What can you do to make the game day experience better? If you can do that, and man, you tie that in with a bowl game, with a 6-7-8 win season this year, then you can kind of paint the story of, hey, we're moving to this new conference and we're better. You do those things together and man, everything's good, right?
All right, man. I really appreciate the time. That's Matthew Bartlett at theroost.com. Enjoy your work as always, and we'll catch up, I'm sure, before the football season starts.
Absolutely. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Thank you very much to Matthew Bartlett for sitting down with us and chatting about the Owls. Mallory, while I pull up his, I was going to pull up his Twitter so I can plug that. Do we have any questions about the Owls?
Our first question: can Rice win enough games to keep Blumgren around? That's going to be tough.
I think this is interesting, right? Because it feels like it's got to be 6. Like it's a 500 season, a bowl game, or bust. And you just can't move into a better conference while underachieving in your current one, in my opinion. And 4 or 5 years is enough to figure it out. And if I'm Rice and we win 4 games or 5 games again this year, I think I'm taking the out as moving into another conference as a way to kind of transform, right? Like maybe – in normal circumstances, you would give him a little bit more time, but with you moving to the American, you can go, hey, we haven't reached a bowl game, we haven't had a winning season, we haven't even had a 500 win season. With us moving up in competition level, we got to go find something else. I think this is a make or break year for Rice, and I'm not sure with the way their schedule lines up, if it's possible to get above 5 wins.
Yeah, I wonder too, because I'm also looking up his numbers, and I believe he's Blumgren signed a 5-year deal in 2018. So he'd be heading into 2023 in his last year. And coaches don't do that, right? Coaches don't typically head into their final year.
Right.
And so I believe there is an ultimatum coming. And like you said, I think this is a good way to kind of, if they do make a bowl, boom, extension, right? There you go, right away. If they don't, I think it's kind of a good way to say, to kind of have a clean break. And I guess the toughest question to me is, like, if that happens, where do they go, Right. Like, what is who is the Rice head coach? Who's the head coach to lead a program like Rice and all of its unique attributes into the AAC? Mm-hmm. Right. Like we thought Blomgren was, he ticked all the boxes, and, you know, obviously we see how tough that job is, not being able to get it done in Conference USA. Well, who's the guy that you bring in to be like, okay, here's the better coach that's going to win in the tougher conference. Like, that's what becomes confusing for me. And that's almost why that's almost why you can't blame them for keeping Blomgren this long, because like,
who else is it going to be if it's not Blomgren?
Right. Like, there's like, you know, what, do you go back to the Stanford and get another Stanford assistant coach and mm-hmm. have him deal with the similar situations? And yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, it's almost like a, I don't say can't win, that's the wrong way to put it, can't win situation, but it's almost like a, I get the hesitancy, mm-hmm. right? And I understand it, because there are obviously unique recruiting circumstances for Rice, and it's just historically, it's always been a tough job. Like, there's a reason why Bailiff was such a loved figure there, is because he was able to get it done. And like, you know, over the course of some years, and even him, it took a little bit for him to finally get them going to a point where he kind of fell to his own expectations, right? They win Conference USA one year, they make a bowl game consistently, and then all of a sudden they don't do that, because again, it's Rice, and they're not going to be a team that's going to win seven, eight games every year. And he ends up, you know, leaving because his own expectations and his own standard kind of caught up with Bailiff in the end.
The hardest way to win in modern football is power football. There's a reason that the air raid has taken over college and high school. It's just simpler. It's easier to do, to get space. You can recruit quarterbacks and wide receivers a lot easier than you can recruit offensive linemen. To me, that's the problem at Rice right now.
Yeah.
They're trying to play smash mouth, hardcore, old school football, and there's only about 10 programs in the country who can recruit well enough to do that on a consistent basis. There just simply aren't enough 6'7", 300-pound athletic offensive tackles out there for Rice to get and to continue to do this every single year. Like, they're playing with very small margins of error. So if I'm asked what I would do if I'm, like, running Rice, I'm going in the opposite direction, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm going pure air raid.
Right.
Or I'm getting Paul Johnson on the phone to come run the triple option like right. he did at Georgia Tech, which is another, you know, really good academic institution that he had to deal with in terms of, like, getting guys in and stuff like that. Like, I'm not running the I formation or single back. I'm not doing tight ends. I'm not running fullbacks. Like,
right.
there's no way I'm going to pound my head against the wall against teams that can recruit better than me with a system that requires really good recruiting. Like, the reason Stanford was good is because they were getting offensive linemen that were going to the league every single year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had the best running back that's currently in the NFL on their team. Like, they had Andrew Luck. Like, they were winning with a lot of talent. You can't do that at Rice. And so for me, that's been the experiment watching Mike Blomgren, even before I had this job, just as somebody who's just like watching the football in the state. It's, wow, that's a hard way to win. And you're doing it at a university that already has a lot of obstacles. For me, that's just a hard winning combination, to where if it doesn't work this year, I would expect Rice to go more on the fringes of offense, right? Whether that be complete spread them out, five wide receiver, let's throw the ball, like Zach Kittley type offense,
right.
or let's find somebody who could run the option, triple option, like an Army, Navy, you know, to try to make it up that way. I just don't know if this type of system is the way you can win at Rice. And this year, it's just, you know, for it to be a make or break year, like, it's tough, right? Like, this is their first five games
mm-hmm.
at USC versus at home against McNeese State. So that's winnable, right? You're 1-1. Then you're against Louisiana, at Houston, against UAB. Like, it's probably likely that Rice is 1-4, and we need to go, you know, need to win four out of our last six games to even get, or five out of our last six games to even get to bowl eligibility, similar to what North Texas did. Mm-hmm. It's just hard for me to believe. It's just really hard the way the schedule works out at Rice, because you're not going to go into conference with three wins like a lot of the power teams are, right? You're not even going to go into conference with two wins like a lot of the teams are. Like, you're playing money games that you have to make to keep football afloat, but you're going to be 1-3, and it makes you, you know, start conference play in such a hole that it's just hard for me. And I think Rice is a good football team this year. I think on paper, they're much better than they have been over the last couple of years. Like, their secondary is really good. The defensive line is going to be good. I think their offensive line is solid. Wide receivers are solid, but they don't have a consistent quarterback. And I just don't see how TJ McMahon or Wiley Green just takes that next step and just elevates this program. It's hard to see a UTEP type season where it goes from like 3-4 wins to 7. I just don't know if the schedule lines up that way. And if you're moving into a new conference, I just don't know if you can move into it with a coach on year 5 that hasn't had a winning season yet.
I think when you mentioned recruiting, and I'm glad you did, because when Blomgren was hired, and it became obvious that what they were going to go for was Stanford Light, which again makes sense on paper, but in execution is very different. You mentioned Stanford getting those offensive line recruits and guys that eventually made the NFL. I'm not even going to mention the skill positions, because that obviously speaks for itself too. But just in terms of the offensive talent, offensive line talent, which is primarily what you need, you can make some pretty bad quarterbacks or average-ish running backs look pretty good if you're just clearing away for them, right? As we saw with Stanford. Since Andrew Luck, Stanford hasn't had that consistent of quarterback play, but they've looked fine because they've had great offensive lines and good to great running backs. How many schools in Texas are running power, right, at that level? How many high schools, I mean? And so you're asking linemen who are used to the camp circuit, who probably have not put their, like, how many tackles in the state of Texas have put their hand in the dirt, right? Like, how many high-end tackles, even like how many of them, you know, have to go downhill, right? It's a lot of pass pro. It's a lot of zone blocking. It's a lot, right? There isn't much hat-to-hat contact with a lot of these guys, obviously because of the camp circuit, but even the systems they're running in high school. Like, they're just not running that scheme anymore. And so you have to almost, even if you do get a good offensive line prospect, you almost have to teach them all over again to be like, hey, here's how you run power. Here's how you run I formation. Here's how you, you know, clear the way. Here's how you run jumbo, right? Like, they don't run those jumbo packages anymore. There's every year around October, whatever, there's a new photo of Stanford's jumbo package at the goal line where they have like 7 linemen, somebody lined up at fullback and stuff. And it's like, they don't run that in here. And so they're not even running it as much in California where they used to with the West Coast system and all that stuff. And so Stanford's even struggling with it right now. But yeah, I agree. Like, if you choose that, you have to basically really hyper-focus on guys that fit. And in Texas specifically, there just isn't that plethora of that type of lineman anymore, because honestly, the game's just overall just changing. So.
Well, there's not those type of tight ends, you know, like go find me an inline blocking tight end in high school football.
Right. I was about to say every 5-star is like, is there supposed to be built, you know, a new Kyle Pitts, right? That's the new tight end.
Yeah. Jatavion Sanders.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like those are what we consider tight ends in the state of Texas now. Like, go find me a fullback. Yeah. You know, like, you can't. You're not going to. You're literally going to go find a linebacker who's not fast enough to play linebacker. Like, they're just, like you said, there's just not those type of offenses in the state to be able to kind of go, like, cherry pick and be like, hey, I like this guy. He's being under-recruited. Like, they don't exist here. And if you're going to – I think the thing that we've learned with, you know, McGuire, Traylor, these kind of guys, like, you got to do it in the way that the state you're playing in is doing it. Yeah. Like, you just do. And if you're Rice and you're already up against so many different disadvantages, you can't add to them with your own system. Like, you're picking that one, you know, like, right. And so to me, it's banging your head against the wall. It's square peg, round hole stuff. Right. And if it doesn't work on the field and you've given it years to work on the field, I just think as Rice, you got to go, okay, this traditional route is not working for us. We need to go find a different and more interesting way to get that talent on not only to campus, but to be successful once it is on campus, because winning 17-14 is really hard. Mm-hmm. Like that takes so, like, you got to be perfect. Like, as soon as you start committing turnovers or having a bunch of penalties, like, you're going to lose those close games. That's what happened to Rice last year. They would have been 6-6 if they didn't shoot themselves in the foot so often. And so you're building your own lack of, like, margin for error. And to me, that's just fighting. Work smarter, not harder.
Yeah.
And I feel like right now Rice is trying to do it in a way that it's hard to even do it at Alabama. Like, Nick Saban threw in the towel on that type of style of play. Like, even Alabama was like, I don't know, man, we're making this a lot harder than we have to. What if we just have, like, a really good quarterback instead of Greg McElroy? And we just spread it out and we score 50 points a game. Like, that's going to make our jobs easier. And we've seen that everywhere in college football. You can't tell me it's smart at Rice to do it the exact opposite way. Like, I understand trying to be the contrarian in the group, But you have to be a contrarian in a way that's beneficial. And I don't see any evidence that their certain way of contrarianism right now is helping Rice football at all. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and end it with this. What's the ceiling for this program as it moves to the AAC?
Oof. I think it depends on what they're running, who they're running. You know, I think Rice, like, obviously they're never going to be like year in, year out conference championship level team. You know, like David Bailiff, like, should have a statue for how, like, for doing that at Rice and Conference USA. Like, I don't think anybody appreciated how hard that is at the time when it's doing. But I do think this is a team that can compete for bowl games, that can win 6, 7, 8 games a year, can shock some teams, can be one of those teams that you don't want to play. Because, you know, obviously they're going to have really intelligent, smart players. They're not going to be idiots, right? And so if you can combine that with the scheme, the way that Army does, the way that Navy does, the way that Georgia Tech used to, the way that Western Kentucky did last year, right? If you can find a way to be unique, I think Rice can find its own identity and be a pretty good football team. But the way it's constructed right now, like, to me, you're stepping out of Conference USA and you're going to the American. It's not going to get any easier. And so I don't know what the ceiling is as presently constructed. We may have already seen it. It may be, you know, 4-8, 5-7, 6-6. That may be it if they continue down this path.
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think here's what I'll say about optimism for Rice fans is that we've seen this done before in terms of, like, there's a evidence is we're saying that they're going to, they could be Stanford light, right? We're literally seeing it with Stanford, an academic institution that isn't winning 11, 12 games a year, but nobody in the Pac-12 likes playing them, right? Like, obviously they've fallen off recently, but there was a long stretch over Jim Harbaugh, through Jim Harbaugh to David Shaw, where you just hated playing Stanford. You knew exactly the brand that they had. It worked for them. Let's go to James Franklin in Vanderbilt, right before he went to Penn State. Vanderbilt was like that weird team where, like, how is Vanderbilt competing with the SEC, right? Probably the most successful tenure I think we've seen in our generation has been Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern, right? Like, Northwestern's not a team that's going to win. They're going to flirt with 10 wins maybe every other year or so, right? They're going to be like, oh man, Northwestern, look at that team. But they're never going to bottom out either, right? Like, they're never going to be a team. Like, I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility in terms of ceiling for Rice, right? If you aspire to be a Pat Fitzgerald who is probably a career, what, just above 500 coach around there. But more or less, you can have an expectation of a bowl game. You know you're going to have some pretty bad pitfalls probably once every 4 years or whatever, right? You might win 2 to 3 games, but you know eventually you're going to build back up to that 6, 7, 8 win slot. I think that's fine. I really think that that's something that I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility to aspire to be, right? To have a coach for multiple years that gets it done, that has a standard, that has a style, and they know all the pitfalls that go with recruiting, all that stuff. I kind of envy programs at times like Northwestern who know what they are and who know that, hey, it's not going to get that much better than this, but they know that it's not going to get, it's definitely not going to be, you know, we're not going to be a doormat, right? And I don't know. I'm a fan of colleges embracing what they are. Not everybody's going to win a national title, right? Not everybody's going to compete for a conference title every single year, year in, year out, whatever. But I do respect programs that acknowledge what they are, have respectability to be competitive, but aren't going to be like, wow, Mike Bloomgren hasn't won 11 games yet, fire him. You know, like, wow, he's not consistently winning 8 games, fire him, right? No, I think that's what the hope was with him when they made this hire, was like, he's somebody who's going to be keep us around 5 to 7 wins every year and then maybe flirt with 9 or 10. I think overall there is a ceiling there that is exactly that, right? Middle of the pack, punching upward once every 3 years or so, getting to that, hopefully flirting with double digits or whatever. But I think that's a realistic possibility, but they have to find a model that works, right? David Bailiff ran an offense that worked there. He was able to recruit to that. I think there, and David Bailiff shows that there is, that that's a possibility that you can win a conference at Rice. I just think they have to, overall, they have to figure out what that messaging is. Is it going triple option? I don't know. I would love to see them embrace that. I know it's kind of, not everybody wants to embrace that model, right? Or embrace that way of playing, but sometimes you just got to. I don't know what it is, but I do think they have to embrace some style of football and go 110% in on it.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's got to be option or spread. You know, you got to pick one and you just got to do it. Even if it's like power spread, right? Like you have to go where the recruits are. And right now that's 7-on-7.
Bailiff is more or less a power spread coach, right?
Yep.
Yeah. All righty. So yeah, that's basically it. I mean, like you mentioned, I think Rice is a good team this year. We'll see again where that leads them. It's not an easy schedule, but I do agree that it is kind of an ultimatum year as well. A lot of the stars align perfectly for them to make a move, whether it's to extend or to let Blomgren go. It'll depend basically on, I mean, we'll know by November, right? Mm-hmm. Like when it becomes clear that they're either not going to make a bowl or whatever, I think they'll make a move in November. Or if they're still fighting, I think he'll last the whole year. If they get to 6, I think he does stay. Even if they get to 5 and they maybe miss out one game or a close game or whatever out on a bowl, I think they might keep him. But yeah, I think overall it's a lot of soul searching this year for Rice. I think they have to reflect on if this direction is the one they want to continue to go, or if somebody else has something in mind saying, okay, well, let's actually try something different. Let's try, you know, this power football thing didn't work. Let's try the option. Let's try something else and see where that takes us. Because yeah, man, AAC, it's not fun. It's not going to be fun. It's going to be a lot more competitive. It's not going to be the AAC that we know now, but it's still going to be, you know, you're adding another in-state school like SMU to the pile already. And yeah, you're adding Memphis as well. Mm-hmm. Like it's just, the bottom may not get that much harder, but the top, it just becomes that much more harder to compete.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Rice and Texas State are in similar situations mm-hmm. as a team where you look at the roster and you're like, man, they are a lot better. Like there's no denying that this roster is much better than the one Blomgren inherited, just like Texas State's roster is much better than the one Spav inherited. Mm-hmm. But it's going to come down to quarterback play, right? Like both of them just haven't had consistent quarterback play. You know, Matthew mentioned in our interview that, you know, they've started 12 quarterbacks over the last 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's absurd how many quarterbacks Rice has had to cycle through. Is Wiley Green consistent enough? Like, does he offer you the upside to be the quarterback? Is TJ McMahon, has he kind of gotten over some of the mistakes that he's prone to making? Like, I don't know. And if they can't figure out that spot, like you look at that schedule, and I know they play a lot of games in Houston, but it's just hard to even, like, where do you even pick the 6th game? Like, I don't know where you come up with the 6 wins mm-hmm. unless that offense takes a big jump forward, and that's going to depend on the quarterback. And as a coach, right, I'd be scared to death knowing that I'm going into like a make or break year in my contract with quarterbacks that just are not yet proven at this level. And we just don't know what we're going to see from those teams until they step on the field. Will that tough schedule early on build some confidence, or will it just completely crush the confidence of both of those quarterbacks? I don't know. And it's going to be an interesting thing to follow, because I really do think it's as simple as that. If Rice has above average quarterback play, I think they have a chance to get to 6 games, and this conversation's moot. If they have quarterback play like they've had the last 2 or 3 years, like, I don't know how they get above 4-8. And at that point, I just don't know how you continue with this trajectory.
Yep, I agree. Thank you again to Matthew Bartlett. I do have his Twitter now, @_mBartlett_ on Twitter. Thank you again for sitting down with us to chat about the Owls. That'll do it for us. But Mallory, you said we had an announcement to make in regards to next week.
We do. Next Tuesday at 2 p.m., mark your calendars, we are going live. And not Boom. Just, you're not just going to hear our voices. You're going to see us, too. I've been working really hard on making graphics for us to be able to put cameras, put video to this. So make sure you tune in next week at 2 p.m. on Tuesday instead of Wednesday. And we're going to have our first live show ever with our new crew, I guess. I know we went live last year with Shahan, but this is our first live show. With our new crew. So, and we may have some surprises for you in store. So please make sure to tune in and comment what you think.
Yeah. Like I said, we'll still put it out obviously on all our podcast distributors afterward, but we will be doing that. If you're familiar with what they do with TFT every day, mm-hmm. it'll be on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, all that stuff. So if you're following us, if you're not following us any of those, be sure to follow us so you can catch it live next week. And yeah, that'll be a thing going forward. We'll be, you know, if you're tired of waiting for this to drop, right, you can just watch it right when we do it.
Exactly.
And Joe, I want to obviously credit Mallory because the intro looks great. The graphics are going to look awesome. But I also apologize for me and Mike because we are not professionals when it comes to TV. So,
hey, we'll be fine.
You will be seeing all of us in our uncut, unprofessional glory.
So, yeah. Me slouching, looking off to the side.
I was about to say, I'm literally slouching right now. And I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to change that. We might just have to adjust the camera to get me while I'm slouching. Yeah. So
I'm not going to be able to put the microphone on my stomach, you know, and just like pivot one way or the other. Like, it's gonna be, I'm gonna have to wear real clothes. Like, it's gonna be a whole adjustment.
Oh yeah. So, but we are excited. It's gonna be fun. Like, yeah, like Mallory said, be sure if you're gonna be watching, be sure to comment. We'll be doing, you know, I'm sure we'll be doing Q&A's and all that kind of stuff as we get going. But yeah, we'll be starting that up, and more or less, I mean, you know, the schedule, more or less, I'm assuming once a week-ish. Obviously, when the season starts Sunday, Craven's going to be on the road, so we're not going to be doing that. But, you know, when we're all in the studio, we'll preferably have it live and on video. So, yeah, that'll be something to look forward to now. And be sure to tune in next week. Remember, next week, Tuesday. Yes. Tuesday at 2.
Our normal time will still be Wednesday at 2. We'll still go live
at
2 on Wednesdays, but for next week, it's different because we'll be leaving for 7-on-7 on Wednesday.
So. Yeah, we will. So, with that being said,
not we.
You, oh yeah, us. Sorry. Yeah, Craven. Me, yeah, Craven's so happy to not be going 7-on-7 next week.
You're gonna be hopefully a little bit cooler than you are now. You'll definitely be cooler than us, so you can.
I was about to say, yeah,
feel much better.
It's gonna be like
100
degrees where we are. So no matter what, Craven's gonna be a lot cooler than where we are. So. Yeah, we'll have that to look forward to next week. But with that being said, thank you to Mallory, to Mike, and again to Matthew Bartlett from The Roost for sitting down and chatting with us. Remember, like, subscribe, all that stuff on iTunes, Spotify, and yeah, that'll do it for us. We will see you next week live.
2 p.m. on Tuesday.
See you guys then.